from around the world and hanging out with that annoying friend who likes to walk into your house and say, Alexa, set an alarm for 3 a.m.
Your alarm is set for 3 a.m. tomorrow.
This is Paranormal One. Here we are again. Thanks, everybody, for coming back and giving us one more shot. Hopefully, you're not disappointed this time. Mike Grasso here. This is Paranormal One, along with Steve Bartell and Josiah Lee Henson. How you doing, guys?
Great. How are you?
Hi, Mike. I'm not disappointed.
Hey. It's a day. We're chugging along here. We hope that being on a normal schedule is helping everybody follow us and know when we're going to be available to you. And we do appreciate everybody who's listening and following along and liking us and all that cool stuff. We really appreciate that. And in case you haven't noticed on the website, we've updated it with some links to things that we've got going on. And as we expand and bring more people into the fold, we'll keep expanding on that. But we'll just keep an eye on that. There's a page for links on paranormal1.com. Take a look at that and you can get some updates. And it sounds like it's 9 o'clock, so you guys want to go ahead and share some news that you've got for us?
Sure. So we've recently got some good news, Steve and I. For anybody who's been kind of following along, Steve and I run Bartell and Henson Paranormal, which is a group that hosts different paranormal events all throughout the different Northern Illinois area, and sometimes a little bit further. But anyway, our longtime building that we've hosted is Conover Square here in Oregon, Illinois, the old Piano Factory. And of course, it was started by Mike Grasso and Sherry, and handed the torch over to Steve. Then Steve and I started doing the tours, and
best decision I ever made.
Yeah, absolutely. Mike took off, you know, went into the sunset, and Steve and I were left with our hands out. But so we run paranormal tours out of here, pretty much exactly how Mike used to do it. We'll start with a group, take them throughout the building, and then, you know, once that's done, we ask them if there's an area that they want to gravitate toward, and we'll let them use all of our equipment, take them there, guide them, you know, walk them through the building. Everything was going great. We were, we were booked out for a really long time. Another part of the tour is we do paranormal teams. You know, we let paranormal teams come in and investigate kind of unguided. That's a little bit of a different style of tour. But anyway, we were booked out for, I would say, almost 4 months sometimes. And the owner of the building kind of asked us to stop and, you know, take a break and all this. And we never thought we'd be coming back, but recently we got some good news that we will be. So that's the good news for right now. And you can check us out. You can go to our Facebook page, which is Bartell and Henson Paranormal, or you can go to conoverghosts.com. That's with an S, conoverghosts.com. And check out the website. There's all the different kinds of tours that you can, you know, check out there. And, you know, some of the history of the building. There's a neat video that's up about the building and stuff like that.
And a couple of weeks ago, the building owner asked us if we could bring a group in, or some of his friends in, to investigate the building. He's like, do you mind giving him a tour? So we did. After talking to him, we got permission to start doing tours again, and our first one is coming up this Friday.
Yeah, I think it's important to note, too, and I may have said this before, but, you know, you don't just use the building. A lot of what you do goes back into the building.
Yeah.
It does help the owner maintain things, and come on, the building's like 130 years old now?
Yeah.
Or at least parts of it are.
Yep.
And it doesn't hold up as well as it used to. So when folks come out and see this awesome old place, you're not only having a really cool experience in an awesome building, you're actually helping it remain as it is so that more people can come along and maybe even yourself down the line. So if you want to come back. So yeah, it's a fun time. You guys do a great job. It's an incredible building. And we've been seeing so many places close down or burn down, just get torn down. Come see something while you still can, because if you don't come out, it might not be there later when you want it.
That's true. And it's funny because we were starting to get calls even a few weeks before we got permission to open up the tours, and just a lot of interest. You know, we were wondering where it all came from. And I know there's a Facebook group for haunted tour operators and things like that. You know, a place for people to bounce ideas off each other and different things like that. And, you know, Josiah alerted me to it that they're talking, because of the shutdown last year and everything, this might be one of the best years for ghost tours ever. You know, a huge rebound in the industry.
That's great.
Yeah, so far I think we're right about 5 different people that have contacted us, people in groups, about getting in here. And we've already got one on the schedule for next weekend. And it sounds like we can have quite a few more, you know, if we want to. But we're approaching it in a little bit light-footed manner, you know, trying to not be as heavy-handed as we were last time. You know, I think I think we'll be okay doing that. It gives Steve and I a bit of a chance to kind of take a breath as well, because like we said, we could be booked out for months in advance, and sometimes you have a tendency to get burnt out, but this building just it's magical in the sense that, you know, we investigate here almost every weekend on our own and we're still not burnt out, you know. So
yeah, so hey, I'm glad you guys are back in the game. And yeah, you know, check out those links that they mentioned before. Go to paranormal1.com's links page, other ways to get in touch. But you know, if you listen to this, you know how we do it at the end. So you know, if you want to just wait until then, we'll go over all this again. But it's great to see you guys are back in the saddle. Good news.
Thank you.
Yeah. All right. Well, do we have anything else to touch on here, or are we going to be ready to start rocking?
The only other thing I can think of, Mike, I don't know if we want to mention that we are going to have some interesting guests coming up. So, you know, that's kind of exciting.
Yeah, we're looking forward to that. So, again, you know, keep an eye on the Facebook page. And, of course, as we get folks in and we talk to them, we're going to, you know, sort of give you resources to be able to find out more about them, too. So hopefully we'll see this little, how did I say it, the snowball will roll down the hill collecting bodies along the way as it travels down the mountain. So we're looking forward to seeing how this turns out. And this is really more of what I had envisioned when I started this, of being able to bring some folks on, get some different points of view, learn some things about what's going on in the community and new ideas. So really looking forward to that, hoping it works out. Don't see why it won't. So yeah, we're just all excited here. Things are really starting to pick up.
Awesome.
So, and I know, Josiah, you're doing a lot of the what do we say here, the arrangements of the guests.
Yeah.
Do you want to throw that email out?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a para1booking@gmail.com. So that's P-A-R-A and then the number 1 booking@gmail.com.
Okay. So yeah, Steve's fighting off like crawling pneumonia.
Yeah, I was just gonna mention that that I've had a bit of a cold all week, and it just morphed into like maybe a chest cold or maybe a slight touch of bronchitis or something like that. So I apologize for my coughing in advance.
I'm sure everybody will appreciate that.
At least I won't do it right in the microphone. If I had a dump button, I'd hit it.
there's the next investment.
There we go.
So Steve can take a dump.
or we can mute it when Josiah says a naughty word.
Oh, well, I'll tell you, the stuff that gets cut out of these things.
You wouldn't believe it.
Oh my gosh, Josiah, the mouth on him.
Terrible.
All right, so that's peril1booking@gmail.com.
Yes, sir, and that is the number one, not O-N-E.
Okay, so, and again, I think we'll, if that, I think that is up on the webpage now, on the links page. We did put that on there. So, lots of ways to get in touch with us. Basically, reach out to us any way you can think of. We will take care of it.
Yeah.
So, great. So, we look forward to meeting some more interesting folks here and moving on. So, all right. Have we wrapped up all the business then?
I think so.
Great. Then what we'll do is we will take a really short break, and when we come back, we'll tell some stories. Welcome back. Thanks for hanging in there. So, we're trying a little something different this time. Actually, Josiah, why don't you sort of talk to us about the idea for today's subject?
Okay. I just kind of thought it would be interesting for us to talk about what got us into the paranormal. You know, was there a specific event? Was it something that's just kind of been brewing ever since you were younger? You know, what is it that really kind of launched us into this? Because I would say, I don't want to give a figure, but I'd say that there's a huge amount of people that are slightly into it, but then you kind of, you crest this wave, and then there's us, you know, like people like us, and, you know, that pretty much have a part of their life devoted to it. So I thought it'd be kind of interesting to talk about the differentiators, you know, like what really caused us to take that next step. And I think we all have an interesting story that kind of leads into that. And, you know, some might consider it more interesting than others and some might not, but I just think it'd be kind of worth sharing and talking about.
All right. So set the bar high for us here, Josiah. Let us know what you got going on.
Okay. Mine is kind of it's like a grouping of several different things. One that I remember that really kind of got my interest was when I was a little kid. I can't tell you what age exactly I was at this time, but I remember my dad coming home. He was working out at my grandfather's farm, which is outside of Stillman Valley, Illinois. And Grandpa went to work at he was a second shifter, so he would go to work when it was kind of getting dark out. And my dad would stay there and work until about that time, and then he'd come home. And I remember him coming home and my mom kind of nagging at him about, like, his behavior. She was asking him, like, what's going on? Like, why are you? He was just being a little bit more quiet and, like, something was wrong, but he didn't really want to come right out and say it. I didn't pay much mind to it, but later on, I was told the story. I remember kind of the argument type thing, but I didn't really fully understand until later what had happened. So my dad was working on one of the barns, and the barns out there, there's an inscription in one of the rafters that says 1854, and it's all peg joinery. So there's no nails in some of the barns. Some of them there is nails and more modern stuff, but it's very old area. My grandfather's basement, if you go down below, you know, into the basement and you look up, there's still bark on the logs that are holding up the main part of the house. It's that old. So
wow,
this place has seen a lot of history. And so dad was working on one of the barns hanging up a door, and he looked to his right. This is after Grandpa had went off to work. Looked to his right because he had this strange feeling like something was watching him. And he says he looks up in the window of what we consider the saloon today. We have like a Wild West town out there. And he looks up in this window and sees an old man with a straw hat on and a white shirt. Dad said the guy didn't seem evil. He didn't seem like he was angry. He was just watching my dad. And if you know where the farm is out there, like, nobody's going to be out there. It's pretty much in the middle of nowhere. You can see the neighbors, but it's really hard. They're like way off into the distance. So it's not like somebody would have just wandered up that dad wouldn't have known was there. And the guy just faded away. And I guess that wow. really, really kind of stuck with my dad. And he packed up his tools as quick as he could, you know, and kind of got out of there. It was very unusual for him. You know, that's just something he wasn't used to.
So the guy faded away in front of him?
Yes. He said he was looking at him, and he looked down and then looked back up, and he was still there, and then he just disappeared. Like he wow. pretty much turned into like some sort of a mist and then just disappeared. And, you know, I've spent a lot of my time out there, and I've not really experienced anything that I can consider paranormal, and I'll be straight up honest about that. There are some feelings in that area of the farm that I get a little creeped out by, but I think it's probably because I know the story. If I didn't know that story, I probably wouldn't be bothered by it, but... That, I guess, is one of the very first hooks that kind of got me into it and really started alerting me to start thinking a little bit differently. And, you know, when you see your parents shook up by something like that, it kind of opens your eyes a little bit. So,
yeah.
And then I had a grandfather, not that one. It was on my mom's side. My grandfather would tell us some stories about things he had experienced, and I'm not going to go into all those, but he was pretty open about some of the things he had experienced, and I respected him more than I respected anybody in the world. And, you know, I knew when Grandpa was telling these stories, he's not just going to make it up for fun or, you know, for jokes. So to me, that was always kind of impressive to hear that. So these things have always kind of been on the front of my brain and things that I've always been interested in. So, you know, you kind of fast forward where my family ended up splitting up. My mom and dad split up, and we moved from Byron over to Sterling. That's where my brother and I went from the Byron area. And I remember, you know, going to school over there. I didn't have very many friends because I was, you know, I was a new kid. It wasn't like I was a dork or anything. Not to say that I'm not, but I just didn't have a lot of friends. So I found a friend in the library. So I would go to the Jefferson Library. That's where I went to grade school. Then from Jefferson to Challen and Challen to the high school. But I would find comfort in going to the library. And the very first thing I would look for is a scary book. Anything that I could find on spooky stuff, you know, Goosebumps, you name it. I've even got a photo of me when I was like, I think in third grade, holding Goosebumps with that like crazy look in my face, you know, like super excited about it, you know. And so it's just always kind of been there. So we moved around to different places in Sterling, and my mom worked during the daytime at Red Apple there in Sterling. And then at nighttime, she took classes at Educators of Beauty. She was going to become a cosmetologist. And my stepdad was a cook at Red Apple, and he would work morning shifts and sometimes evening shifts. And, you know, we, like I said, we were bouncing around from house to house, and the owner of the restaurant asked my stepdad, "Hey, would you be interested in renting out my house? I just had a family move out. It's over on the west side of Sterling, and, you know, it's a 3-bedroom. It'd be good for you and, you know, the two boys," because it was my brother and I. So we went and looked at it. Everything looked pretty good, you know, and we decided, yeah, let's go ahead and rent it out. So we moved in, and, you know, when you first look at this place from the street, it is nothing spooky at all. And if you guys want to Google it, go ahead. I'm going to tell the address on air because I believe now the house is abandoned. So it's not like it's, you know, not like anybody's going to bother it anyway. But it's 908 West 13th Street in Sterling, Illinois. And if you look at it, it's not like the quintessential haunted house that you look at. It's like really spooky and double stories. This is basically a ranch style home, you know, just real boring, nothing interesting about it whatsoever. And we started experiencing some very, very strange things in the house. We had what my mom called the Chinese bobtail cat just wander up out of nowhere. And it was this black cat with like a little stubby tail. It didn't have like a full-blown tail like most cats do. And apparently the way that it was cut, you could tell that it was done intentionally, and it was just, I guess, called the Chinese bobtail. And it seems to us as a family, as we got to talking later, that a lot of these events kind of took place after Oreo. We called her Oreo after she showed up. And I don't know if it's correlated with her or if it was that was just a marker when we all kind of started noticing it. That was a good, you know, point in time where we could say, hey, that's about when it started. But, you know, we moved into the house. My my brother and I shared a bedroom, the third bedroom that was there, we used as a gaming room. So we were at that age where we could still share a bedroom. And I remember sometimes going to sleep at night and I would hear sounds up in the attic that sounded like a little, almost like a pre-quarter, you know, that little flute type thing, but it's a really cheap little plastic one. I would hear a tune playing on that. And I remember waking my brother up a couple of times and he and I would sit there and listen to it. We're like, that's really weird because, of course, you know, no one in the family played one of those. And why is it coming from up above in the attic when what we were told there was nothing up there? You know, it was pretty much as insulation, so there shouldn't have been anything there. That was pretty much my first thing that had happened. And then the major event that took place was I was by myself. My brother was at football practice. My stepdad was working nights at the restaurant, and my mom was at school. And as plain as day, I'd say it was about 5:30 in the evening. It was getting dark. About 5:30, I heard my mom walk in the door. You could hear the screen door open. And she walked in and she called Oreo three different times. She goes, "Oreo, Oreo, come here, Oreo." And my immediate reaction was set down my Sega. I was playing Sega. Set down the controller, walk out and ask mom why she's home. You know, thinking probably forgot lunch, you know, whatever. And she's coming back, you know, from school to grab it and go back home. She wasn't there. You know, she was literally not there. Mm-hmm. This is before cell phones. This is, I mean, people probably had them, but not like we do today. I was just, I could literally feel the blood drain from my face. All I could do was think to myself, I've got to get outside and sit down on the curb, because it didn't feel threatening, but at the same time, it didn't feel right, if that makes any sense. It wasn't one of those you know, that was weird. It was like definitely red flag, but not like an evil monster or anything type of thing. So
probably thought you were going crazy at first, you know?
Yeah, I really did, Steve. To be very honest with you, it was so realistic. I thought for sure something didn't seem right. Like, am I starting to imagine things? It was that real that I heard her voice. And wow. All of us have moms. We all know what our parents' voice sounds like. I mean, we'd hear it. Yeah. We could hear it out of a crowd. So I'm waiting out on the stoop. And I'll be honest with you guys. I was crying a little bit. I was pretty shook up. And mom came home, and my brother came home, and my stepdad was still working. And she obviously wanted to know, why aren't you in the house, and what, you know, what's the matter? I opened up to her and told her, hey, this is what I heard. And at that point in time, she sat my brother and I down, and she goes, guys, I really hadn't wanted to say much, but I'm going to go ahead and tell you guys this now, because it sounds like you're both kind of experiencing some things. You know, Jake and I had heard the recorder, and then my happening. And she said, a lot of times when you boys are at school, like during the daytime and she's home, you know, sometimes she'd have days off, she would hear my brother and I giggling. And she knew our voices, of course. She would hear our voices giggling and laughing from the pink room, which is the room where we had all of our, like, set up, like our Nintendo, Sega, and all that. And she said she flew out of her room because she was pissed that we were skipping school. She's like, this isn't these boys. These boys don't do that. And she was going to come and give us a whooping for skipping school. We weren't there. And she said it was almost like clockwork, where it was certain times in the morning she would hear us. And as a family, we got to talking. And there were times, this is the really, what I consider to be extremely strange. There were times when she would pull into we had a carport. It wasn't like a fully enclosed garage. It was an attached carport. And she would pull into the carport with her GMC Jimmy, and she had a catalytic converter cover that was messed up. And it made a real, real particular rattle that you knew what it sounded like.
Yeah.
When she was physically there, we knew mom was home without even having to go and check. You know, we could hear that catalytic converter. It's super particular sound. We would hear that mimicking of that vehicle pulling into the drive multiple times. I can't even tell you how many times. And we'd hop up and she's not there. So whatever this thing was not only mimicking our voices and our family and our inflections, it was also mimicking vehicles. And my uncle's whistle, he would come over. It was my mom's brother, and he would stop over unannounced quite a bit. and he would stand in that carport window and he would do a really particular whistle. It wasn't like one that a bird would make. It's something he's been doing since he was a little kid. And we were hearing that whistle, and it was all these things that had taken place. And the thing that really threw me over the edge was when my stepdad began to acknowledge it. He was a Muslim guy and kind of, you know, serious in his faith and all that. And, you know, to have him acknowledge that he's hearing this kind of thing, it's like, okay, this is now real. You know, it's not just me. It's not just my family kind of over exaggerating. We're all corroborating one another's story. And to me, you know, the mimicking thing is a bit troublesome, because everything that I've looked at online says that a lot of times a demon will mimic. But, you know, with that being said, I don't want to just set on that either. I don't want to be like, that's 100% what it was, because, you know, who knows? Could it have been some sort of, you know, spirit that was just really good at mocking, or I don't know what. But knock on wood, we haven't experienced it since. It's nothing that's happened to any of us since. But that's really what kind of got me into it, Mike, and made me realize that I want to look way further into all this stuff. So that's kind of my story.
That's really interesting.
You know, I've heard that story a few times now.
Yeah.
And it just occurred to me this time as you were telling it, it made me wonder if, rather than an entity, you know, mimicking or mocking or whatever, is it possible to leave a residual effect, like have a residual haunting if you haven't passed away yet?
Yes. Okay. I've heard on a lot of different episodes, Steve, where people feel like they're haunting themselves.
Oh.
And they hear like the husband and wife talking and they're like, we're talking, like, what is
but
going
we're right
on
here? Yeah,
exactly. So I have heard that.
So that makes me wonder then if maybe you guys hadn't left an imprint of some kind, like, you know, you know, over the weekend you kids were having a pillow fight in the pink room or whatever, you know, and then a couple days later you guys are gone away at school and something from that echoes back, or, you know,
that
whatever.
That would make more sense, because it never felt threatening. It, like I said, it never felt like something evil or looming like the internet says. You know, I think we would have probably known that if it were like really evil. So what you just said makes a lot of sense, actually. But why?
And actually makes it a little bit more benign as far as, like,
yes,
you know, thinking, oh my gosh, were we close to being harmed?
Exactly. One thing right. Jake said he experienced that not one of us ever did. So when you walk into the house, you've got the kitchen like straight back. You meet the living room and then there's the kitchen. But there's a dividing wall and there's two doors that you can enter and then like make a U like a horseshoe. And we had one of those rotary dial phones, I guess you'd call them. And it was mounted on the other side of that wall. And Jake would be on the phone all the time to his girlfriend, and her name's Cassie Reeser. I'll never forget that. And he said that he was on the phone with her. And this is big buff football Jake, you know. And he heard something yell, "Get out," really, really loud. And you've got to bear in mind, this is prior to any of those ghost shows. I mean, that hadn't even happened yet. I don't even think South Park was on air yet, you know. So this was way before any of that. And he's not just going to make that up. And he was bawling his eyes out, too. And like I said, he'll tell you this exact story. This is big buff football Jake, you know. It's like nothing shakes him. And, you know, he hears something say, "Get out." That's the only thing that I really can consider to be really, really spooky. And then he had a couple things happen down in the hallway where something banged really loud on the window. And he said it was like almost like it reverberated the house, but nobody else heard it, you know. And
did he recognize the voice? Is anybody familiar?
When he tells it, Mike, he says it's really guttural, and he almost yells it. Like when he's telling the story, he kind of yells it. I don't think that he recognized at all.
What? And so my theory is, if it's the location that's doing this echoing or residual haunting kind of thing, it could have been a previous owner.
Exactly.
Telling a dog. Hearing
you guys.
Or possibly.
That's a good point.
Man, that's you just took that to a whole new level, Mike.
Yeah.
voices from the future
if you
coming
can hear
back
the past,
to him.
Why can't you hear from the future, too?
Yeah.
True. Very true.
One other thing that was very strange about that house, actually two other things, and I'll kind of move on. But one thing, the neighbor behind us, directly behind us, his father had had a heart attack. He was my age, and his father had a heart attack at the dinner table and died. And before that happened, before I even knew it happened, I learned about this about 30 to 45 minutes later after what I had experienced. I was looking out the back sliding door, and I saw what appeared to be a black, the best I can describe it, would be like a gorilla in the tree, but it was not three-dimensional. It was like a shadow. I guess that's the best way to explain it. A really, really dark shadow in the trees about the size of a gorilla, and it was just moving throughout the trees, and I remember just thinking, my God, what am I looking at? And then it went away, and then about an hour later, my mom got a hold of me and said, let's go to County Market. We've got to buy a bunch of food because Roger's dad died. And I, at that point in time, I had learned that when somebody dies, people cook for them, even though, you know, it wasn't like somebody we really knew. Mom said, let's go to the County Market, load up and get them some food and stuff like that, because the last thing on their mind is cooking. So I kind of learned that that day. But once again, what was that? You know what? I have no idea. Could it have been an overactive imagination? I don't know.
Yeah, how many times do we dismiss things that way?
True.
Oh, I just imagined it. But true. Maybe it wasn't.
And I'll tell you, Mike, whenever any of us, my brother, my sister, she would stay there occasionally, my mom, whenever we're within like a 4 or 5 block radius of that place, there is this strange yearning of go drive by the place. It's like like a magnet almost. Like I'm getting the chills just thinking about it. It feels like a magnet's drawing you right back to that house.
Didn't you tell me you guys stopped by, or maybe Jake did?
Jake did.
Talk to the current owners, or the, you know, the most recent owners and everything.
Yep, I guess Jake did, and it sounds like there was a bit of a language barrier, and I don't know if he got much from it. I think his hope was they'd be like very haunted. I think he did say that they agreed, or like they.
Well, I was just gonna say, I think the guy might have been Hispanic or something.
I believe that's what it was.
Jake said the Hispanic word for ghost, and the guy perked up and is like, oh yeah, yeah.
I think it was something like that. Yeah, but there wasn't like an in-depth conversation.
They didn't discuss specifics. But as soon as he said the word ghost, the guy like, oh, yeah, yeah. And, you know, said, we're experiencing something in here, too.
And that would make sense, because the restaurant owner, what he would do, he would, you know, rent it out to his cooks or his busboys and things like that. And a lot of times the busboys were Hispanic, and, you know, that could have been one of them. But last I knew, the house said, like, do not trespass and things like that on it. So I've got a feeling it looks pretty rough. Well,
if it's abandoned, we can always go jimmy a door and do a...
I'll be honest with you, Steve. Yeah, I'd have a hard time going in there, truthfully.
I know.
I'd love to, but I'd have a hard time without you guys.
Sure.
And
I'm not condoning breaking and entering, by the way. So. But we are always looking for new spots too.
Absolutely. Yeah. That'd be an interesting one. And I would love to hear, like, have a conversation with, you know, people that have lived there afterward, and just not lead them into it or anything, but just say, hey, you got anything weird going on, you know? See what they say.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, I hear stories about people who live in haunted houses. And I'm like, wow, that must be really scary, because you think it's just nonstop off the hook stuff. But, you know, it's like stuff spread out over a great period of time. And when they piece it all together, it's like, oh, yeah, maybe there was something going on. Because I think on any given day, you can find something weird going on in your house, an unexplained noise, or, oh, that must have been the neighbors. But what happens over and over and over again, you kind of, I don't say you get desensitized to it, but maybe to a degree you do.
Yeah, for us, I don't know that we were ever desensitized to it. And I think it was just because how personal it was. Like, if it were maybe like knocks or something like that. Or
strangers' voices even.
Yeah.
Not voices you recognize.
Yeah, the was most unsettling part was the fact that it was mimicking them to a T, and they weren't in the house. You know, that was, I think, for me, what was so unsettling about it all.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. So that kind of got you interested in this stuff, huh?
Yeah, that at that point in time, it was, I think that was pretty much the turning point when I realized that, okay, this stuff is real. I always loved the books and stuff, and listening to my dad and grandpa's stories. I loved it. But at that point in time, it was, okay, this is real for you, Josiah. This is no longer someone else's story. This is your own.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah, having I remember a point where, and maybe, you know, I can lead into this at one, you know, when it's, we get further in, but I remember thinking at one time, it really sucks to be around now because all the good ghost stories have already been told.
Yeah.
All the good experiences have already happened. You had to be at a haunted place to experience anything. You know, you had to be at this famous haunted hotel or ruins of a mansion in England or something. And everybody who's got a good ghost story to tell has already experienced their stuff long ago, and there's nothing more to happen. I guess that was wrong. So, yeah, you got to experience your own. Very cool.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'm processing all of this because these are the kinds of stories you hear. Like, I mean, that's big stuff. That the mimicking and the voice your brother heard.
Yeah, yeah. And like I said, that was scary for me to see that. You know, here's this big buff football player crying because he heard a voice yelling at us to get out. You know.
Now, did it continue the entire time you lived there at that place?
So the get out was a one-time incident, but as far as the mimicking, yes, I would say it kind of tapered off toward the end of us living there, but we were there, God, I'd have to say 2 years, and I would say probably a year and a half worth, you know, of it happening.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And like I said, this was before any of the shows were, we could contact, you know, like nowadays you can throw a stone and hit a paranormal team. Back then it was not that way.
Right.
You know, and people probably thought a little bit weird of us too. You know, when you talk about that kind of thing, especially in that era, you know, people would have thought a little bit weird of you, you know, but nowadays it's just so prevalent that I think it's way more acceptable now.
Yeah. It's interesting. Like when we had the store and the paranormal, the ghost tours up, almost every day somebody come in and tell me a story. And I think either Oregon, Illinois is the most haunted town in America.
Yeah.
Or every town has a lot of stories that people just aren't telling.
I think it's probably the second.
Yeah,
I agree. So. Maybe a little bit of the first, though, too. You know,
it would be cool if it was that, but yeah.
Yeah, I think like Steve said, Oregon, just hearing all these different stories. We just heard another one last night about the theater here in town, you know, so I think Oregon's kind of a bit of a hotbed for activity.
Yeah, I mean, people from all over the place, there's certain zones that seem to be more haunted, but do you remember the old insurance agency? They said they had stuff going on in their place, Mike.
Oh, right.
And I mean, the judge's house, the former Supreme Court justice, which it's over by the McDonald's. It's the giant white house that they restored.
Are those the people that got in touch with us?
That's the family that got in touch with us, said they were experiencing things there. Multiple other people in other locations have all had stuff happen. And, you know, I remember Janelle telling me she had some family that was living in Chena, and I guess their house was really haunted, and from hearing other people tell it, I guess a lot of Chena is haunted as well, you know.
Wow.
So who knows, it might just be the area, it might be the river, the limestone, something.
I mean, you think about it, Oregon Public Library, sledgehammers, the riverboat, you know. What else? Conover the hardware store, remember that one? Hardware store.
Yeah, we're shopping over at Ace, over at Snyder's, and they're telling us stories of weird stuff that's happened in the store late at night and everything.
That's a newer building, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. But who knows?
I mean, even the old part's newer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The police, when the police would pull up, we'd be standing outside of Conover after a ghost tour, you know, and they used to always stop and say, what are you guys doing? You know, and then after a while it became like, you know, oh, hey, you guys had a tour tonight. That's cool. But, it seems like every time a new police officer came by and we said, oh, we're just doing ghost tours, every single one of them had a story about Conover. One of them told us the police department's haunted.
Yeah.
He said, oh, yeah, our building is haunted, you know, and that's half a block down from here. So
the courthouse.
Yeah, the courthouse. I mean, the Washington Corners, they said, you know, people that were downstairs were hearing that music and stuff upstairs.
It sounds like there's a party going on up there.
Oh, where Sweeney's is at, that used to be the old, you know, antique shop. She had stuff going on in there. So, yeah. I, you know, once you actually sit down and start you know, actually listed them out, it's like, holy shit, there's like one after another after another.
If you were to have a map and dropped a bunch of red pins, I would say that'd be a heavy congregation of pins in that area.
I think we need to do that because we just listed about, what, 12 places?
Yeah.
And I can already think of like a handful more. I mean, that doesn't include the Roadhouse. It doesn't include, you know.
Yep.
Once we start marking pins, yeah. I have a feeling there's going to be more pins than,
you know. Absolutely. And, you know, what's to benefit these places about talking? Some of them I get, like, you know, the Roadhouse and us, we want to draw people here. That's natural. But, like, what do these other places have to gain from
nothing
it?
To gain.
Yeah.
And some of right. them, some of them, you know, well, you know, like the one house, you know, they were interested in getting us in there, but then they were kind of reluctant to make it actually happen.
Yeah, exactly. So. How about you out there, Mike, where you're living? I know that you had mentioned that there was a firehouse that's kind of haunted, but is there a congregate or like a pretty heavy?
There was a website that had, like, somebody said years ago, hey, I'm writing a book, share your stories. And people were throwing stuff out there, and I don't think the book was ever written, but just from the limited responses that came back, there was a lot. I came back one time and before I'd moved, and I was just visiting, and I sent a message out to a cousin of mine that was interested in doing some investigating. And so she put out on Facebook, hey, anybody have someplace we can go? And she got like a dozen responses in a heartbeat. So, and I think that's where the firehouse, actually, well, she was a member of the firehouse that we went to. There was a hotel we went to that night, a new hotel.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I mean, it was like 2 years old. There's a local hospital, some tunnels, a couple cemeteries that are supposed to be pretty haunted. I mean, just this is without even like thinking. You know, or digging.
Yeah,
you're hearing a lot of stories. So yeah, you know what? It probably is everywhere.
I bet it is. I'll bet you anything. If you would really start to look around all these different towns and, you know, talk to the right people, we'd probably hear a lot more.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. As you guys were talking, I'm thinking of like three more places that I've been told are haunted here in town.
Same
you
here.
Know, it's. I mean, it's funny. I never really thought to like sit down and compile a list, but. The fact that we just went off on that tangent and everything has me really interested in putting a giant map up and marking all these spots, you know?
That'd be cool.
Yeah.
And maybe even put feelers out there in some of the local town Facebook pages. Just say, had a paranormal experience? You know, we'd like to hear about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I bet though a lot of people would not want their address to be publicly known as a haunted house, because then people might be creeping around.
Well, and that's not necessarily the intention. The intention would be to speak to them privately and add it to our little map of paranormal happenings. Just, you know, part of doing the due diligence of paranormal research would maybe be looking for a pattern or to see if it's widespread, you know.
It's a public service.
Yes.
Well, it's funny. If you don't mind, if I jump in then.
Go for it. Perfect timing. Segue.
Because the house, because, you know, I moved from Pennsylvania to Illinois and moved back 10 blocks away from where the house where I lived, like when from my like 1 to 5. And the first experience I can remember is when I was in this house. So I'm somewhere, I'm guessing like 3-4 years old. And I would hear my parents talking downstairs. Like my bedroom kind of was, the door opened up to a hallway that like led down. It was an open staircase. So I could hear them downstairs. So sometimes I'd get up, sometimes I'd lay there for a little bit. And finally, when I was able to get out, or whenever I got up, I'd run downstairs. They were not there. But I heard their voices, the way they echoed, like you said, Josiah, you recognize different things, you know, very specifically.
Absolutely.
There was a way the voices sounded in the kitchen. I'd go down, nobody there. They were still in bed.
Wow. So you had a very similar.
Well, it happened several times. And as a little kid, you're like, eh. I mean, at that age, you're like, oh, that was weird. I know it happened several times.
And there may have been times, and again, you know, I'm doing like you did with the gorilla jumping in the trees. Maybe it was my imagination getting carried away, maybe. But I used to have these intense nightmares in this house. And they were the same ones over and over and over again. There were like three of them that just, I could tell when they'd start. And I'm like, oh, it's going to be this pattern. And I could not break out of the pattern. It was the same nightmare over and over again, and it just terrified me. And my dad even told me then that, because he was a state trooper, so he worked odd shifts. And one time it was daytime, and he was trying to sleep because he was working, you know, the shifts, weird shifts. So he's laying in bed, and he keeps hearing like the floor creaking. Like somebody's shifting their weight on it. And it kept going and he couldn't sleep. And so finally he just sat up and said, look, I'm tired. I was working all night. I'm just trying to get some sleep. I don't care if you're here. Just leave me alone. And it stopped.
Wow.
It never bothered him again. But he said that he hated going into the attic. It just felt like there was something not right in that attic. Now, I remember going up in there as a kid. I always thought it was really cool. You know, the stairs that pull down out of the ceiling, and you creep up, and it smells all mold, musty, and, you know, old up in there. It's like, oh, cool, the attic. I never picked up anything weird. I don't remember anything like that. But he specifically said that he did not like going up into that attic.
And that's coming from a state trooper, you know?
I mean, you know, there are people, too.
But normally, I guess what I was getting at is they're normally on kind of the more fearless end of the spectrum, you know?
Well, you know, I think you kind of have to put some fears aside when you're, you know, on the interstate at 2 a.m. and you pull somebody over.
Yeah.
You kind of just say, well, here we go. This is what I signed up for. But when you're in your house and stuff's creeping around you, I don't know. That's like, you don't sleep on a public street, you know, but you do sleep in your bed, and you don't, especially if something's invisible around you.
True.
So, but I guess, you know, like my parents were both kind of open to that kind of thing. It's not like we, you know, obsessed with it or anything, but it was okay to talk about this stuff. Like weird things would happen. And they're both like, oh, there's weird stuff out there. And they both had stories that they told me. But it was weird because I was thinking about, and I mentioned this a couple of times, like when I was growing up, In Search Of was just coming on. And the show, like the PBS show Nova, sometimes would have things about ghosts or ancient mysteries and stuff like that. And I remember at one point seeing something about like my first exposure to EVP. And it was on cassette recorders, of course, because this is the 70s and that's all you had. And one of the things was, if you try to record them, like if you get one, like you play it back wherever you are, leave the house or leave wherever you are, transfer it to another tape. Because somehow there could be some, like it could disappear.
Oh, okay.
If you don't do that. And it's like some have to be played backwards or at a different speed. So you have to do like the cutting and splicing with the cassette or the reel-to-reel, however you record it. And I remember those things. I'm like, wow, that's a lot of work. Someday I might have to do something like that. But the probably the biggest thing for me was the local Boy Scout camp. It's called Camp Mountain Run, Bucktail Council. And going up for summer camp was like the biggest thing, because on Fridays, you'd go into Spook Hollow.
Mm.
You cross this little bridge, and you hear the stories all the time. Everybody tells the stories. I mean, we'd get the stories. There was a creature called the Hodag. We always thought it was Hodad, but then I'm hearing later it's Hodag. Okay, whatever. Big creature, red eyes, scared you. This guy called the Drifter, a ghost that would move around, like float around. Hatchet Hands was another one. But a lot of them had to do with this bridge you crossed as you entered into Spook Hollow. And there were times when, like, horses would not cross that bridge. Like, there's something about it. And then these are stories at the courthouse. You can look them up. We're like, yeah, yeah, someday we can do that. I don't know. They say that. But one of the big things, though, with this story about the Hodag was this guy, and I'm probably going to mix the story up a little bit here, but this guy, Charlie Snyder, he was like the OG. He was the man who originated a lot of these stories. He collected them, and he had a lot of these experiences. And he inscribed this on the bottom of this can. He etched his name in the bottom of it and something else. And he said, if anybody gets this can where he hit it, like way, you go way up this big path in Spook Hollow, and it's a can with a hook on it that's sitting on this piece of wire. And if you get it, you'll get all this stuff. Like, people have donated money. Somebody donated a Volkswagen. If you come back with this can, you're set. You've got like thousands of dollars in a car. And so on the last Friday night of camp, they tell you stories and take you up a little bit, tell you a couple more, walk a little more, a couple more stories, take you up more. And finally they'd say, okay, who wants to go get the can? So the time I was there, my dad was an assistant scout master, and he tried to lift my arm up. I'm like what, 12, 13? He was using both hands trying to get my arm up, and I was like, no. It was like he would have to lift me up off the ground to get my arm up. Finally, they picked some guy to go up, and half hour later, he came running past us screaming.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So, as we were heading back. But that really got me excited about the ghosts and the stories. The power that the stories have, the excitement, the community that really is created around these stories, that was probably one of the biggest things for me. It hooked me. Anybody that had a ghost story to tell, I'm going to listen. That really did it for me. And the fact that, and I'm sure a lot of people were just into it for the scare factor of the camp thing. They didn't believe them. And maybe there is no truth to any of them. I don't know. But man, it's fun. Mm-hmm. It's really exciting. And I would love, I think I sent you guys a link one time. They started opening up the camp now. You can rent out camps during the off times when the scouts aren't there. And there's some cabins and tent sites and stuff like that. And I'm thinking I would love to rent out a cabin for like a weekend or something like that, and spend it up there and check out Spook Hollow. Now, of course, you have to look out for like snakes and bears and things like that, but you know, ghosts too, maybe. So who knows? there could [S2] Nice. [S1] Be those things as well. They were taking us up for the stories one time, and the guy started beating around on the where we were going to sit down with a stick, and somebody said, "You're looking for ghosts?" And the guy said, "Do you believe in snakes?" So there is that part of it. But I guess one last thing. I'll put a picture of this book up. This I got this book here. I got it. This was published in 79. I probably got it in 79 or 80. Okay. Haunted Houses by Richard Weiner and Nancy Osborne. This book has, I've probably read this book 100 times.
Wow.
There's like a dozen different stories in here. Some are locations, like the Winchester House, the Bell Witch.
That's a good one.
Things like that. The Whaley House is in here. And then just some general things. But this book is nearly falling apart. I opened it up to look at it, and it was like cracking. Like, oh, no, don't do this. But I just love this book. I probably read it more than any book I've ever read in my life. And it was kind of my Bible, because it was my haunted house book. It wasn't the library's book. It was my book. Yep. And it was my guide. That book, Scouts, those things really cemented my love of the paranormal. I looked it up on Amazon. There are some copies, like used copies, for 99 cents. So I'm like, okay, well, maybe if anybody needs a backup or something, that's pretty good. But that's sort of my what formed my journey. Also Fate magazine. I think, Josiah, I gave you some of those.
Yes, sir.
It's a little. I'm pretty sure it's still being published, not so regularly.
You said it's online version now, right? Online version.
I think that you can get it as a PDF.
Okay.
I don't know if they are still. I had subscriptions on and off through the years. It's been a while since I've done it. Once in a while, I'll just randomly get one in the mail. And it's like trying to get me to resubscribe.
Wow.
Like, oh, that's kind of cool, but no, that's okay. But for a while, too, that was like one of the few places you could regularly get ghost stories, like new ghost stories, not those old ones that are in the books, new ones from people. And it was like, okay, so all of these ghost stories aren't in the past. There are still some things happening.
Sure. And but, I think with the internet, that really helped kind of open it back up again, you know?
Yeah. Incredible. And even for nothing else, to find people that are like-minded and being able to get things out there.
And you really struck a chord with me, Mike, when you said the community. That, I guess, is one thing that I kind of, you know, at that age when I was moving over there, like I said, I didn't have a lot of friends. And it's not, I ended up making them, of course. But I remember reading these stories and thinking to myself, man, how cool would it be to have like a group of my friends that was interested in this and would want to come to my house together and watch Are You Afraid of the Dark on Nickelodeon, you know? And like, I was glued to that stuff. Like, that was just my jam. And I guess my thought when you mentioned community, that's what I had in my head. Like, how cool would that be to just have a group of kids that age that were all into it together, you know?
Yeah, because when you went to camp, man, you, believe it or not, you scared the crap out of you.
Awesome.
Yeah, it was great. Really great memories.
Was it actually called Spook Hollow, Mike, or was that just a term they said?
I if you looked at a map, I don't know that it would be called Spook Hollow.
Okay.
But everybody knew where it was.
I love that.
This guy I mentioned, Charlie Snyder, he actually sat and recorded a bunch of stories.
Okay.
And somebody posted a Dropbox link one time for it through the Camp Mountain Run Facebook page. So I snatched that up, and it's great to... Now, somebody put some campfire sounds behind them, and sometimes the crackling noises and the owls and that, or the mix is a little too high on those. It's hard to hear his voice at times, but it's great to hear in his words and in his voice. But I guess he sat and recorded these, I think, for his grandkids.
Oh, cool.
And then after he passed away, his family decided, we want to put these out for people to hear. So they were digitized and put out there. I'm assuming it's still okay to do that. It might be worth checking on, but I think if it can be done, maybe I can put a link. Maybe I can reach out to where I got it from and see if it's still okay to distribute that. But it's pretty cool, you know. It's a little touch of local history here, and anybody who grew up in this area has heard about Spook Hollow and the things that happened there. So yeah, that's actually one of the things I was looking forward to moving back, was being able to get back into that. I don't know. We'll see. It's been almost 3 years now, and it still hasn't really happened. But hey, we don't want to rush into anything, right?
Yeah. Always something to look forward to.
So that's my story.
Awesome. Thank you for sharing. That's interesting, Mike. I don't think I'd heard that before.
Yeah, that was Camp Mountain Run.
Nice.
Scare the life out of you. How about you, Steve? What you got?
Well, thank you guys for sharing your stories and everything. I to be completely honest, I think my focusing on the paranormal or is more of a more recent thing. I was interested in the paranormal as a kid and everything, but not because of any firsthand experience. It was more of just the overall, fascination as a youth of all things, haunted, aliens, horror movie genre, just, the whole shebang, So I didn't have anything that I experienced in my youth that kind of drove me towards this. But I can remember having, friends and relatives tell stories of things that had happened to them. And I think the only one thing that I can think of clearly was when I spent the night at a friend's house. I was probably around 10 years old or so. His bedroom was in the basement. And I don't think he was saying it to try and scare me or try and freak me out or anything. I think he was just talking about something that he had experienced. But he said in his bedroom, and, thinking back on this, I remember him all this stuff clearly, but it actually kind of doesn't make much sense. But he said in his bedroom, you know, where his bed was faced, the wall that his bed was facing, he said that one night he saw what looked like a ghost, and it was a ghost of a bull's head that he saw in his room.
Like, yikes.
Not like a bull's logo, but like a bull's head, and it was up near the ceiling and everything. And I remember him telling me about that, and I spent the night there, you know, quite a few times, and every time that I would spend the night in his room, I would just like stare at that spot, just saying, I want to see this thing, you know, that'd be so cool, you know, and just never did see anything. And I think he had other stories about things that some of his family members had experienced, you know, like, old woman walking through the house type of thing and stuff like that. Mm. So his house did have some activity, but that's the only thing I can clearly remember as far as, being around and everything. But, you know, you got to realize, like, you know, it's funny when Josiah was talking about stuff that happened when he was a kid, and he's, you know, saying, you know, cell phones were probably invented, but not everyone had them and stuff. But, you know, that was like 15, 20 years after when I was a kid, you know. But when I was a kid, you know, Ghostbusters, it was in the movie theater. You know, I saw that at 11 years old.
Wow, that's awesome.
Oh, yeah. In the theater at 11. Poltergeist came out when I was about 9 years old or so. Mm. So, you know, I think for me, when I was young, it was, like I said, it was just kind of one of the components of all the things that fascinate kids, you know. I did a lot of reading when I was young. And I know I had some, like, ghost story books, you know, something similar to the book that you were just showing us and everything, Mike. But one series that I read, it was called Alfred Hitchcock and the Three Investigators. Mm-hmm. Read every single one of them. Just love the books. And about every two or three in the series was about the paranormal. You know, their very first book was The Green Ghost, I believe, was number one of the series. Yeah, exactly. And we actually found here at Conover, they have like a, you know, the little library thing or whatever they call them, you know, where people swap books out and things like that.
Oh, yeah.
We were looking through there. You know, there's about 10, 12 books in there that were about hauntings or ghosts or whatever. But one of the books I found was Alfred Hitchcock and the Three Investigators, The Secret of the Haunted Mirror. So I grabbed it. Huh. You know, we have it here in the office and everything. But, you know, those books just, you know, blew my mind. I didn't like the Hardy Boys quite as much. You know, it was a little drier, you know, maybe. But I think they dealt with the paranormal sometimes in that. And I started reading Stephen King at a very young age, you know, probably much earlier than I should have, considering a lot of the content in the books, you know. Like, I had read it probably three times by the time I was 15 years old, you know. But anyways, so there wasn't any one thing that happened in my youth that got me focused on the paranormal or you know, zeroed in on it. That was fairly recent for me, and that was more like, you know, I was off doing my thing in the college, in the college town, and just, you know, working, you know, having fun, whatever, and and then coming here to Oregon and everything, and about that time is when the shows were getting popular. Well, mm-hmm. not the shows. It was, you know, I think just Ghost Lab and Ghost Adventures were the only two things that were on that were paranormal related. And, you know, was really into those. And then when you started up the tours here, Mike, and mm-hmm. I said, holy crap, I can actually take equipment and do what they do on TV and actually try and get finally a ghost experience, you know? I mean, that was just like, you know, I was attracted to that, but yeah. So I don't have anything quite as compelling as you guys, like the one thing that got me into it. But, you know, as a lover of all things, you know, that pique a, you know, teenage boy's, you know, imagination and everything, it was it was just a natural development, and here we are today.
Or at least the other thing that piques a teenage boy's imagination.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah,
but you know, I was also in scouts, and you know, we'd have you know, scary ghost stories around the campfire and everything, you know, and mm-hmm. just, you know, you enjoy being scared, you know, you enjoy being, you know, don't know.
Yeah. It's fun to be scared when you know you're safe.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's you know, you're telling the stories about some other place, some other time, some other people. And you know, you're sitting around the campfire and you're safe in that area around the campfire, but you don't want to walk too far away.
Yeah.
You don't want to hear a couple ghost stories and then have to go pee.
Right, right. It's safety in numbers, you know. I mean, once you're isolated, yeah. You know.
Yeah, you don't have to be faster than the bear, just be faster than your buddy. That kind of thing. Yeah, well, just
and Mike, you can probably attest to this. So you know, like I said, like I alluded to, you know, like I had heard other people's stories and I really wanted to experience something myself, you know, so when I started coming into your tours, you know, I hate to sound naive, you know, but I kind of thought that within the first couple of times I was going to see a ghost, you know, or something. And then, you know, very quickly realized, okay, no, it's nothing like that, you know, but you could have probably picked up from the things that I said or whatever, that I was just so eager to experience something, you know?
I was too. I did the little walks. Okay. I was walking people around in the hallways, the common areas. And, you know, we'd hear a noise here or there. We'd feel a weird brush of air go by or something like that. But when Midwest Ghost Society came out, and that was the first real thing. We actually went into the attic then. I was like, ooh, wow. This is the first time up there. And I was up there with Michelle and Joe. And they had everything pretty well laid out. They said, okay, we're going to be, this team's going to be here for a half hour. This team will be here. Everybody was to stay in their spot. So I'm up in the attic with them, and we're in that first area right where you come up with the stairs. And below us, we hear, through the museum. And they're looking at each other like, oh, my God. And I'm looking like, oh, this is what happens. Cool. You know, I'm thinking this is normal.
Right.
And they're just about crapping themselves. And you keep hearing, and then it comes to the steps. You're coming up the stairs. And we're like, whoa, this is getting real. Well, here, you know, Chris used to work for Terry.
Yeah, yeah.
He wanted to take some pictures of them. So he's like walking around while they're doing the investigation. Oh. He comes up with the camera. He's like, hey. Like, God. Dude. So he was there for like an hour or so, and then he took off. Well, the next time Midwest came out, I'm like, hey, can I hang out with you guys again? They're like, well, yeah, but is anybody else going to be with you walking around? Like, no, that will not happen again.
Right, right.
Because I thought he got the message like everybody else. Stay where you're supposed to be. Don't walk around.
Sure.
No, yeah. I mean, that was like my, you know, minute one of an actual investigation was what not to do. I learned what not to do. And why. So, but yeah, I'm telling you, Steve, I'm like, hey, why shouldn't we see ghosts whipping past us all the time and walking through walls and talking to us? We're up in this haunted building. We're asking questions. We're inviting them in to speak to us. That's why aren't they just clamoring to tell us their stories? I was really hoping for that, just like you were. But then, you know, but sort of like, you know, you go hunting and you expect, you know, a deer to come walking out all over the place, and you just take your pick of which one you want. Doesn't work that way either. So,
nope. And not every little stick snapping that you hear, you know, oh, wait, I think I just heard a footstep, you know, and you turn around, no, there's no deer. It's a damn squirrel, you know. So, yeah, that's a very good analogy.
Chris walking through taking pictures.
Yep. Yep.
But I think Steve can attest to this, Mike. You wouldn't have ever had this experience because you were the guy putting it on. But when I first saw like your flyer on, I think it was on Facebook where I would have seen it, I was just like enamored, like, oh my God. Like Steve said, like you can actually do this. Yep. And I remember distinctly when we were talking, it was over Facebook, you and I were talking, I did not care how much it cost. All I knew is that I was going to go, and I would have paid $1,000 to let me go with you, you know, and then, yeah. You know, I was just so excited and anxious, and I guess to be able to relive that, in the way that Steve and I get to, and the way, of course, you did, it, I think that's kind of what keeps things fresh, is because you get to see it through fresh eyes all the time. And yeah, I think without that, it would, it might get a little stale, but that really, it's just like giving well, a vampire a little taste of new blood each time.
You mentioned that toward the beginning, something about how there's, it's kind of like, I don't want to say drudgery, but you know, you get worn down, you get tired out. It's week after week, night after night, running these tours, because I mean, it's exhausting. It really is tiring to have to keep people's concentration, keep their attention, keep focused, you know, and all the prep work that goes in, all the tidying up afterwards.
Keep them from wandering off.
Yeah.
Keep them focused.
Making sure nobody's drunk. But when somebody comes in and you see them just get so excited when something happens, or just being excited about holding the equipment, or being able to ask questions, and you know, holding their friends tightly when they're listening, hoping they don't hear anything. The voices coming through when you do an EVP session. It's so cool to see that. And yeah, it does make it fun. It's like starting all over again.
I agree.
I've mentioned it before, maybe even recently too, but yeah, a lot of times you would get, you know, you had stuff going on and you'd be in a hurry and whatever. And you think, oh man, you know, I, you know, got a ghost tour tonight, you know, and you're thinking about it as a job or a chore, and you pull up to the building, you get out of the car, and it hits you. Wait a minute. This is not ever, you know, a hassle or anything. This is what I love. And everything just kind of like, oh yeah, this is great. You know, the magic sets back in, and it happens. Mm-hmm. Anytime you start feeling that way about it, you know, you instantly remind yourself, oh yeah, man, this is
that's so true.
What I enjoy. I mean,
yeah, I would spend the whole week 12 hours a day there in the building, and then I've got to come back for like 5 hours at night, and I'm going to get home at 3 o'clock in the morning. But you know what? It never, by the time I get in there, start setting the stuff out, checking batteries, and making sure the doors are unlocked for the people coming in. And it's like, okay, this is going to be fun. Because maybe tonight's the night we do see that spirit walk through the wall in front of us.
Yes.
Yes.
Yep.
And even your setup, Mike, that is seared into my brain, just walking through that door and seeing your little glass case and all that. And, you know, there
smelling
were even
the incense, you know.
Yeah, exactly. And there were a couple of times that I was so excited I'd come early, and I was probably that annoying guy that's like, gotta be here like an hour early. But I would shop around your little shop, and I still, to this day, on my wall in my bedroom, I have a Hula Girl that I bought from you that was on an apple
crate label.
It was like on an apple box. And it was framed, and yep, absolutely. And I even that experience alone was it's like that even made me feel cool, and it was like you were ramping up for this awesome evening, and it was never a letdown.
I mean,
I was say
exhausted, just like you guys, I'm sure, at the end of some of these nights, you're totally exhausted. But
yeah,
like I'd get home and I'd be so keyed up, I couldn't sleep for like an hour and a half, even though I'd almost been up for 24 hours. So, yeah, it's. Way it goes. It's what you do. It's fun. Well, Josiah, I've got to say, this was a great idea.
Thank you.
Thank you for it.
It was fun, because even though I had heard some of the stories and everything, you know, I heard a lot of new ones as well from you guys. So
yeah,
that's a great topic. You know, and Steven, I was kind of like you. I always thought that I had no stories until I really started thinking about it.
Right.
And you know, it's
sure.
We've all got our path that's led us here, and you've got some pretty good stories now. So,
oh yeah, and I can't help but wonder if maybe things didn't happen to me when I was young that I just instantly just, you know, shit canned and said, nah, that was just no whatever, and just blew it off.
Yep.
And now I just can't recall it at all. You know, it's, I don't know. I mean. I'm sure there's something.
I've mentioned this before, and it's like one of these. I'd almost like want to be hypnotized to see if somebody could remind me of where I could pull these memories back out. But I remember, like as a kid, laying in bed and just having like these weird, almost like a sleep paralysis, but not really.
I don't know. I can't really explain it. It's just... that's why I wish somebody... I just remember it was there were odd feelings when I was real little. I'm talking like 6, 7 years old. And I don't know what it was. And I'd kind of like... You know, if I could do one of these hypnosis things that recall what these feelings were and I could describe them better and understand what they were, I'd really like to know what it is. If it was just maybe I was just really comfy in bed and didn't want to get up, or if there was something else happening, I'm just really curious about that. But you know, it would have been easy just to write them off and say, yeah, it's nothing. Sure.
Yeah, that'd be interesting to crack that egg open to see, but hopefully it wouldn't be something that, you know, it relives
there,
the memories
there that
you're kind
of
suppressed, you know?
Right.
Yeah. Ugh, that could be opening a can of worms, but how cool would that be to actually tap into that, you know, not the bad thing, but
yeah,
like
I mean,
tap
maybe
into
it was
kind of what
was
going on.
Out of body experience or something that was happening or that I was having. I mean, it could have been something cool like that. And it's like, oh, yeah, you can tap back into that. You just need to, you know, try to practice this meditation. Like, oh, okay, cool, let's try that. Or it could be, yeah, there were vampires holding you down on the bed and sucking your life force. Oh, okay, let's try to avoid that. Suddenly I wish
I'd
move further away.
You know, and it's funny, not to go, I don't think it's straying off topic, but, you know, I mentioned about things that may have happened to me that I just dismissed and couldn't quite recall, but, one thing that did occur to me not too long ago was my mom had always told us the story of when she was a young girl. They were out at the Mississippi Palisades. She was out there with her mom and dad, my grandparents. And I don't know exactly what happened, but she got away from the family and everything. It was going down a path and somewhere down the path, she stopped and she saw a Native American in full headdress and whatever, you know, paint, face paint and just all whatever. And, you know, she always told me that story and she was scared to death and took off running and everything, you know, because
there was
going to be attacked by a
wild
Indian,
you know? Shows on TV and movies when she was a kid.
Yeah. So I always heard that story and everything, you know, and I'm just like, oh, yeah, so she saw, you know, maybe there were still Indians in them hills or maybe someone was reenacting. And it wasn't until recently I started thinking about it. I'm like, holy shit, she might have seen the ghost of an Indian, you know? She didn't frame it as, oh, I saw, you know, the spirit of an Indian. You know, she saw an Indian standing there and it scared her to death. Am I going to get tomahawked or, you know, whatever? And so she went running off. She was scared. But now that I think back on it, I'm like, you know, she could have very well seen a spirit of some Native American who was on that land.
But, well, like Josiah was saying too, like the stuff in his house, maybe this is, a time slip. He went walking back to his village and said, I saw this little girl dressed in these really weird clothes.
Weird clothes. Absolutely. Yeah.
Man.
I don't know.
Did she say that? Did he react to her at all, Steve? Or
I don't know. I remember asking, but, but yeah, that would be interesting. She didn't say that he like advanced on her or anything, but she just saw him and it's like, what the heck? And then gone, you know?
If you think about it, though, if we have, of course, they would have spirits. Every human being would, you know?
Right.
So I think that's super interesting and definitely plausible.
But it's funny that it just never occurred to me. I'm just like, okay, whatever. Maybe there's still Indians living in the area.
Yeah.
You're rationalizing
50s,
that,
you know, or whatever. But not... Right. But, and I never gave it a second thought until now we're doing this, you know, and you think back on it, it's like, holy crap, maybe she saw a ghost of an Indian, you know?
Cool.
Nice.
I bet, you know, like you said, you'd almost have to be hypnotized to recall some of that stuff that you forgot about ages ago.
Well, I think we talked about the hypnosis thing earlier. I
brain cells,
for it.
They're gone.
A couple of weeks ago, we said something about that.
You know, it's funny, my wife's work, when she's out at the White Pines, every year the owner would throw a really good, you know, Christmas party for all the employees and everything. And one of the last few years before they closed and everything, she brought in a professional hypnotist who was going to mass hypnotize everyone at the party, you know. And it was interesting that they had volunteers come up on stage, you know, and, you know, you could tell that a lot of people were just kind of like, not into it, or, you know, didn't want to be hypnotized, wouldn't let themselves get hypnotized. There were a few people, though, that were either really going along with it or were fully embracing it and got themselves hypnotized and everything.
But, cool.
Yeah, it didn't work on me at all, but...
She's like, yeah, I was thinking, yeah, like, you leave a tip.
Yeah, right?
With the owner.
Yep. Sign your will over to me.
Yeah.
Nice. Well, hey, I think we had a really good discussion tonight. Thank you, guys. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
So,
really fun.
I guess at this point, I just have to ask everybody, hey, keep listening. We've got a lot of new things coming up. We hope, like was mentioned earlier, we're going to have some guests. Yep. Words. I'll make it work. A lot of guests coming on soon, we hope. and if you're interested in being one of them, then you can contact us through para1bookings@gmail.com.
Booking. Yep, thank booking you. Without booking. The S.
And that's a one, number one, not the word one. Para1booking@gmail.com. Or you can just go on to the Paranormal One website, and there will be a link there to it. We've got Bartell and Henson Paranormal on Facebook, as well as ConoverGhosts.com. That's ghosts, plural. And... Rock River Area Paranormal Society on Facebook. Has that team been doing anything lately?
We kind of took a bit of a hiatus with COVID happening and everything kind of shutting down, but we do have some things on our radar, and our hope is to kind of get back rolling here soon.
You know, and Midwest Ghost Society collaborated with us last year, I think, when we did that Stronghold Castle event, and, after that, they have invited us to multiple investigations, you know, the both teams together and everything. I know they didn't have a whole lot of team members coming to everything, so they had a lot of open spots. And so we're actually, you know, booked for multiple events with the two teams together. So while we haven't done any exclusive wraps stuff yet in 2021, we have some events coming up.
So those will be on the Rock River Area Paranormal Society Facebook page.
Yeah, we're going to Broadhead Manor a week from this Saturday in Broadhead, Wisconsin.
Yep. Keep it rocking. All right, guys. Well, I guess we're ready to wrap things up on another week. Or 2 weeks, as the case may be. So everybody, we just went through all that stuff. If you want to get in touch with us, rewind it and hear how to do that, or go to the paranormal1.com's links page. Anything else?
Nothing I can think of.
Okay.
Nope,
well, since the tank's empty, we'll go ahead and wrap things up. Thanks again, everybody, for listening. If you like what you hear, let us know. If you don't like what you hear, let us know. Either way, we appreciate you being a part of what we do. We really enjoy it, and we like doing this for you. So we will keep doing it. And I guess that's enough of me talking for this point. So until next time, we will see you in the dark.